So why don't you introduce yourself and tell me who you are and where you're from and when you were born?
My name is Mary Jane Coulter, and I am from West Virginia, Scott's Run, a co-camp area that is made up of 13 communities. I'm from the Osage community. I was born when my parents lived in Osage, and I continue to live. I'm a lifetime, a lifer here in Scott's Run. And I was born in 1948, December 31st, 1948.
New Year's Eve.
What was it like growing up in Scott's Run?
Well, I spent most of my life in two households on Osage Hill. I lived with my namesake, my mom's best friend. Uh-huh. I was named after her, and my living with Mary Jane was a middle class home. Mm-hmm. But when the 50% of the time that I lived with my mother was poverty, and when I was with the Gusties, we had a household of four persons: Mary Jane and her husband Eddie and her son Eddie, who I looked upon as a brother. Mm-hmm. But when I was with my mother, who was very poor and ill, I lived with five of eight brothers. Three were gone off to the service, and I lived with that. When I lived with them, it was a totally different lifestyle altogether. When I was with the Gusties, for example, that meant living with modern furniture, fancy wallpaper, lace curtains, holiday dinners and events, a television that actually had reception, and hot running water in an indoor bathroom, and new school clothes and shoes and cookies and milk at night. But my life was totally different when I lived in the coal camp with my mother and with my eight brothers. The biggest advantage was the only utilities we had was electricity and cold running water. And the advantage of being the only girl of all brothers, mm-hmm. I got to get in the number 210 tub first. that was a big advantage. And but I learned how to cook and bake on a coal cook stove. Wash clothes, scrub floors, and wash clothes in a wringer washer. A lot of skills that I needed throughout my life to this day. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I spent with one friend, Louise, who is still my lifetime friend that lives on my property now. Okay. Now, the things that we did, we rode bikes, played jacks, played hopscotch, and jumped rope, things like that back then. And we also walked around 2 miles to the Shack neighborhood house for mm-hmm. swimming and roller skating during the summer. And a lot of times, Louise and I would come from Osage Hill downtown mm-hmm. and in the summertime and peep through the windows of the beer gardens and and watch the adults drink and have a good time and try to dance, and we'd make fun of them. And a lot of times we'd catch a lot of good fights and arguments too over dice games and stuff like that. I think that went on in all coal camps at that time.
Was that here?
Yeah, this was right in Osage. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I was always thought it was growing up in a, well, I thought it was then, it was a little city with a train going through it full of coal right in the middle of the town. We had grocery stores and plenty of beer gardens. They called them beer gardens then. And clothing stores and grocery stores, pawn shops. And before I was born, I understand in Osage they even had two theaters and a bowling alley at one time. And it was a booming coal camp area. In fact, Scott's Run, I understand, had like 60 coal, small and big coal mines operating, sending, you know, during the war, sending coal all over the country and out of the country. Again, like I said, I always thought it was great to have all of this. It was like living in a little city, and having the train go down the middle of the street. And now that I'm an adult and environmentally conscious, I realize how dangerous that was and environmentally harmful. To have a train go right through the community 24/7. Yes, but bouncing from two different households really taught me to this day to live in a privileged and a non-privileged world. Mm-hmm. And I've had to live in both worlds throughout my life. And that I always look back on my mother being poor and ill, was sad in a way, but then in another way, I really learned a lot of life skills, having to live, thankfully, with a best friend of my mother's.
Right.
And
do you remember class being any issue between the two of them, your mother and Mary Jane?
No, they never said, you know, when I wanted to go home to see my brothers and visit, Mary Jane never said, well, you know, you're not going to get cookies or milk, and you know the house is dirty. Nothing like that. And the same with my mother. If I wanted to go with Mary Jane, you know, it was, they were that close. Oh, they were, both were non-practicing, God-fearing women, and they always used their wit and cliches to put you in check immediately. Like, you know, if you were doing something that they didn't like, they'd give you that snake eye look and tell you, God doesn't like ugly. And if you ever steal a nickel, you will definitely pay back a dime. And no bird flies so high that it hasn't come down for water. I mean, they always had something like that and look at you and say, God will get you for that. And but both were very well read and highly political. I remember just maybe being 8, 9 years old, them taking me to the polls where they were working for certain politicians, Democrats mainly, passing out those little miniature bottles of liquor and their cards that politicians, you know, would give it to them, and then plus pay them, you know, for being at the polls all day and maybe going to Chaplin or different coal camp areas to pick people up to come and vote for them. That was a really fun day.
Yeah.
And again, being raised in that kind of environment and with them, I'm very political.
Yeah.
But respect was always a must with both of them. In fact, on one occasion when living with my mom, knowing that my Aunt Loma had a fondness for wine, and well, she was considered a wino, mm-hmm. that gave me the, you know, notion that I could disrespect her. Well, my mom gave me a different idea by cracking me over the head with a china plate immediately when she heard me, you know, being disrespectful to my aunt. No, that wasn't allowed. But that's the only time. And I think it was one of those old plates that had a crack in it, hairline crack.
Right.
But she did crack it over my head. But that was the extent of my growing up in uh-huh. Scott's Run, and I still live here. My brothers and I have, I'm a 35-year Mon County school secretary,
okay.
retired, and my brothers and I had a local pub here in Osage, McFadden's, mm-hmm. named after my mother's maiden name.
Okay.
For 40 years, about 40 years, we had a pub and an antique shop, and I had a tea room.
Oh, yeah.
We always had a business and had something going on. All of us, although none of us out of eight brothers and one girl, none of us were formally educated as far as college or anything like that, but we all had really good work ethics and was always had a nice appearance. And mm-hmm. so the fact that my mother was very poor and ill a lot of times, mm-hmm. that was instilled in us.
What was her heritage and your father's heritage?
Well, her heritage was, it was unfortunate how she ended up in Pittsburgh. Her parents, she was born in Turtle Creek, PA.
Okay.
And due to a divorce, she came to West Virginia and married two men that were, I say to this day, were bad choices.
Uh-huh.
And my father was like a lot of coal miners. They ruled their wives and kids with an iron fist.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the case with my mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And having one kid after another, the old saying, barefoot and pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't remember them ever being together, but I know
mm-hmm.
From what I've heard and what I know what went on, that she was one of those. And he was one of those men that ruled her with an iron fist, so to speak. And I think a lot of miners did that because they were ruled with an iron fist.
Mm-hmm.
In the coal industry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like an abused child becomes an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way they lived rough and
mm-hmm.
They became rough, abusive men.
Yeah, like the system of violence.
Yes.
For ethnic heritage, were they from?
Well, she was McFadden, and she was Irish, Scotch Irish, I understood. And I don't know what red was, what their gene pool was, too much.
Yeah.
Other than a sister, Aunt Loma, and my Uncle Slats, who spent a lot of time in our home.
Mm-hmm.
They really respected my mother and both of them were helpful during the times that I lived with them. They could, they were heavy drinkers, winos is what they were, and then they came home to roost and to get cleaned up and that. But I mean, they were wonderful cooks. My Aunt Loma would send my brother Charlie and Danny, who were younger than myself, out to pick whatever was in season, blackberries or blueberries and crab apples. Mm-hmm. She could make the best cobbler with crab apples.
Wow.
And people just don't believe that, but we would pick them. And she would make a cobbler, and Uncle Slats made homemade bread. But there was a lot of that throughout the coal camp on Osage Hill. You could walk out the row and all the coal camp houses. You could smell soup beans, pinto beans, and always homemade bread or pepperoni rolls.
Oh, yeah.
There was always an abundance of that. Mm-hmm. And you could go in anyone's house, and you were welcome. And my friend Louise, or Miss Kitty, who is Miss Sarah's sister, that comes here. Uh-huh. And if they had bread, homemade rolls, there was, like I said, there was always an abundance of that, and beans.
So there was sort of a system of sharing or communal.
Oh, yes, definitely, yes. And I think that's a trait of a lot of people around here to this day, and my friend Louise and myself, and that were all of us are, I think, fairly giving people.
Well, it seems like that's continuing in the museum, and sort of the coffee shop, which is by donation, and sort of anyone can come and sit at the table.
Right. Mm. If they put something in the jar, that's fine. If they don't, that's also fine.
So is Osage Hill this ridge that was... okay.
Directly.
Okay. Like where the settlement house is, or?
Well, yeah, towards that way.
Okay.
Towards that way, but it's over to the
right. Okay. And that was also part of Scott's Run.
Right.
And did more like middle class families live there?
Oh, no. There were several poor, and then there were several that their dads worked. For example, Louise. Louise's dad was a pumper. They called him he was there 24/7 almost in the mines. Mm-hmm. And he never missed work, they were better off than my mom was. Now, Eddie Gusty, the Gusty family, same way with him.
Yeah.
He worked all the time, overtime, and they were the first people on Osage Hill to get an indoor bathroom and a porch, put a porch on their old coal camp house.
What were the race relations and relationships between ethnic groups?
Well, I started school when we were segregated.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Louise and I started first grade. I went to the school that's presently there around the corner, Osage Junior High, and then there was a hill. Then there was a school up on the hill called Floyd Big Cox. That's where the black students, and at that time they called them colored. That was the colored. They used that phrase freely then. But second grade, we were together.
Okay.
But prior to that, you know, I have a picture over here of us when we were little. Did you see that? I know this is just audio, but she went there and I went to that school. That was the two schools. And we stayed all night together. You know, I was always in her house or she was in mine. Now, this was the Gusty house here. That's when I happened to be staying with Mary Jane. And this is her nephew, Roger.
I think I saw that. Is that in the CD?
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is the three of us as adults. My daughter took this at a wedding. Yeah, we travel together. We are still friends. And all the black kids that I went to school with, I see them often at grocery stores. And, you know, we have a close relationship. Yeah. They always came to the pub. And even in the 60s when they were down south, when it was heavily fought that, you know, that they didn't want to black kids to go to the schools and that. And well, when I think they were even having some problems here on campus, but in this particular area, I don't remember them ever having race war with one another. And as far as one of the neighbors being prejudiced or, because pretty much all the kids that were better off than my family and my mother, there was other kids that were in the same boat. And then the kids that were a little better off, their dads were coal miners. They weren't doctors or lawyers. No, that was across the bridge, across the Star City Bridge. You know, you've had that clientele. But the clientele down here was pretty much, I don't know, I really don't know of many students, none. I don't know of any that was of a professor or a doctor or a lawyer. Or, yes. They worked in the coal mines or the glass factories. And then the hospital opened, Ruby, then, where it was West Virginia University Hospital. And a lot of people were hired there as custodians or painters or maintenance. And that opened up.
Did former miners go work there?
I'm not privy. I wasn't privy, you know, or didn't make myself privy to that information. But
when you were growing up, did you hear any stories about families who had moved to Arthurdale?
I heard about that, and Mr. Buster Brown, a black gentleman that he lived in one of our rental units. He put some of the African American people in their place about Eleanor Roosevelt. Eleanor Roosevelt was not the one that didn't want the blacks. The people at Arthurdale voted on that, that they didn't want blacks or foreigners. They thought the foreigners were worse than the blacks. But Eleanor Roosevelt was disappointed in that. And he was the only black that really defended her with that. They said, you know, a lot of them would sit at the bar and didn't know their history, because he would say, you need to read your history. He would tell.
That's funny. Yeah, I've been reading about that recently.
And that was not so. And he, well, and at that time they had a community garden across the creek behind the museum here. And he was made the foreman of the community garden. He didn't want to go to Arthurdale. He wouldn't have went if they wanted to take him. But I know in the bar setting, you know, I'd be behind the bar that subject would come up. And he would get real loud. Oh no!
But other people would talk.
How it
about
went.
Yeah.
I was there. I was there.
Yeah. Well,
I also read that they took only the best off families to Arthurdale because they wanted it to succeed. So.
And the only negative that I heard about from a white person in reference to Eleanor Roosevelt. Helen Wasick said that when they took the pictures and when they went into the houses down here, they went into the worst circumstances. They did not go into her family's house, which I'm familiar with, because we lived in one house that you actually scrubbed wood with Clorox and lime or something, mm-hmm. and that's the way their house was. It was always, they didn't have anything, but it was spotless, and they had a garden, and they were very resourceful. And there was other families here that was resourceful, but they were all clumped into one category. And Helen was always upset about that, mm-hmm. that they didn't go in to some of the houses and take pictures of someone that was a little better off than the ones that they did go into.
And this was the WPA, the Farm Security Administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she mentioned that a few times. She was just as upset as Buster was about that.
Right.
His story.
Yeah, that's funny. let's see. Could you tell me a little bit about how the museum came about?
Well, when I retired, and part of my building that housed the pub and the tea room and the antique shop burned, I just had retired and was, long story short, I got involved with the park and recreation group, and they were also a part of the museum. This is the third museum in Osage. The first one started up the street, and the building started deteriorating, leaking, and they had to have somewhere to put the artifacts. And a lot of the artifacts that were donated over the years that it was there were ruined. Well, they had an opportunity to put it in my building, part of it that burned, but they refused to do that, and so they put it in the community building, which was considered the community building, but was once the fire hall. That's what it was built for in 1968. Well, it ended up the same thing. Bad decision making, no money. As we have right now, older board members that cannot get and do as much as they did. Even myself, I just turned 70, and it's hard for me to engineer a fundraiser and work it. That takes a lot of work. Well, anyway, another story. That building became moldy, mm-hmm. mildewy from leaking roof, and and a lot of the artifacts, Hoosier cabinets, glass cabinets, really nice stuff that they acquired over the years was all. Now, I always say if my brother Danny, who had been living, mm-hmm. he was my partner in all of this, I lost him to an automobile accident in 2003, he would have cussed them out for who was responsible for letting that happen to the hit, because he was quite the history mm-hmm. person. I mean, really, he knew all about every president, their administration, names of their cabinets, and what their policies were. I mean, that's how he could read a book tonight, 500 page, and tell you everything the next day. But anyway, he would have cussed. Well, I cried when I saw all that stuff, and you know what a Hoosier cabinet is. It's, it has that flower bin in it, and they're just gorgeous and new. And I saw that one up the street, and oh, it was full of bird doo-doo and rat doo-doo and mold mildew and a lot of the stuff. Well, what we could salvage was just very few. A lot of the stuff here in the museum is the collection from my brother Danny. He collected antiques, but now the stove was in the museum. It took five of us to clean that up.
Wow.
And that shelf was, I worked on that for days in my yard and hosed it before I would bring it. And it would look a lot better painted, but the group voted that, you know, they wanted to stay the same. But I gave them an offer that they could not refuse. Mm-hmm. Free rent for a year until they started getting on the ball with fundraisers or getting grants. And well, that was, what, 6-7 years ago? It'll be 7 years this September. They still get free rent.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that because I have a school retirement and Social Security, and I also have four rentals that I'm okay to do that and to give back to my community, because my brothers and I have not only financially from our business, it's time for me to give back to the community, and I think everyone should, and especially if you reap the harvest, and not only financially, but growing up here. With the people that we grew up around. And, well, another thing about growing up, I didn't have to worry about my mom or Mary Jane if I did something wrong. I, you know, Miss Kitty or Miss Sarah or whoever, if they would see you do something, you know, they could correct you. And when they took that home and told your mom or Mary Jane, well, I saw Janie doing this or doing that, and you know, they didn't say, oh no, you didn't, she wouldn't do that, oh no. you just wasn't allowed to do that, and they knew that their neighbors and their friends wasn't going to lie on you.
Right. Yeah.
It takes a village.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm giving back to the village in my little small way, I think.
Well, I think it's big.
As long as I can, you know, afford it.
Yeah.
And I'm able physically.
Right.
And the older people, John, who grew up on Osage Hill, mm-hmm. and George spent, you know, his young life down here. And they are all retired, and they look forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Coming every Saturday.
Yeah.
Gives them something to look forward to and to talk about growing up in Scott's Run. And, well, and then the coal miners, too, that come. We had 24 come Saturday. And it's about that many, and sometimes even more on Saturdays. Well, you have been here.
Yeah. I don't know if I've seen 24, but there's been close to that.
And so how did you sort of become the director? Was that when you,
I think,
offered them rent?
Professor Falk gave me that title. I didn't ask for it. Yes. I did not ask for that, but here I am. But our president, Ms. Sarah, just turned 95. Lou Baracus, he's 93. So, you know, that speaks for itself that they are not able to do fundraisers.
Yeah.
And including myself, I'm not a grant writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the grants that we have sought 5,000 other organizations have have applied.
Yeah.
And that's the case also. It's hard getting monies from anyone. I had the Milam Foundation, the gal that's in charge of that, she came down and talked to Professor Falk and George and myself a couple months ago. I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, well, it's hard. You know, they want things that they feel are very visible.
Yes. But it was worth the old college try, and I still try to talk to people about it. And if I go to a restaurant and I meet someone new, if I go by myself and sit in the bar area to eat, and the person next to me, if I strike up a conversation, I'll give them a card and promote the place.
Yeah.
Yes, some different places that I go.
Right.
So, and I hope everyone else does that. I think they do.
Yeah.
I know Albert does. And I took Albert to, Albert just turned 82 on Sunday.
Oh.
Albert Anderson.
Uh-huh.
And I took him to the Japanese steakhouse at the town center.
Uh-huh.
I thought for sure he had been to, been there or a restaurant like that where they fix the air in front of you and with the fire and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, he was just tickled to pink. He called me the next day and thanked me for his birthday party.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. He said he just, you know, that was the cat's meow.
Well, what was your vision for the museum or for the coffee shop?
Well, I thought that, you know, it would be the heartbeat down here is, you know, it would just maybe bring a little pulse to the town and do what it's doing, do exactly what it's doing.
Right.
Bring some people here. We have had people visit from all over the country in the 6 years that we have been here.
Yeah.
We've been here since 2012, we've had people out of the country, all over the country visit. We've had lots of people come that grew up here but left by way of the service or moved to the car industry in Michigan and moved to Ohio and do different jobs like that and come back and visit and just thank me for having it here and just couldn't get over, you know, the fact that there was something to come and something to see, pictures to look at, and people that they even grew up with to talk to. And when we had a fundraiser at the VFW, a dance, a couple of those people, one came from Alabama, one came from Texas, just for that weekend to come to that dance.
So it was, you always wanted it to be a community center that would bring people back. So Al talked a little bit about some of these perceived efforts to dissolve Osage, and sort of the road, the highway coming through and the mall. Do you have a kind of a picture of that history? Because Al was very scattered.
Yes, I know that Osage was weakened immensely. Our population was weakened by the I-79.
Okay.
And then we were also weakened by floods. The population had to move the county bought out a lot of houses.
And, when was that?
96 was the last one, and I think they bought, right here downtown. Mm-hmm. My brother's property was one. There was two across the creek, I'm sure. One up the street. I know there was at least 6-7 down on the lower end below the school. I think there was 4 or 5 houses there that we lost. And losing our charter didn't help.
And that was the city
charter.
Yeah. And we had, I say the PSD was a heartbeat, and mm-hmm. we lost that. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like it has just been stripped from, its identity mm-hmm. completely. Mm-hmm. And it's sad. And now, I say we are those left behind, those of us that are left behind, we suffer environmentally from the fly ash trucks, from the coal trucks. I just hired a gal to hose my front of my building, mm-hmm. but that could be done all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also have people that are not nice for the environment that actually wait for rain, and when the creek gets high and the water's flowing rapidly enough, will throw the stockpile of garbage that they have in the creek. I can watch it go down, and then some of it gets hung up behind my buildings here. In fact, I wrote a letter to the editor, and it hasn't been put in the paper yet.
Know. This is the Morgantown paper?
Yeah, it hasn't been put in the paper yet.
How long ago did you
Last week. I'm not sure if it's going to end up in there or not, but I'd like to see it end up in there. Because I've called the authorities who have a jurisdiction over it, and they come and... they tell them they have to get the garbage off their porch. And just when I sat down at my desktop and wrote that, I had walked up the street, and they have the garbage knee high.
Wow.
Waiting for rain.
I know.
I mean, it's... I had, in my lifetime, I had 4 to 5 Volkswagens when I was living with that poor hat on. Uh-huh. I even before the environment was, when it was environmentally fashionable, or wasn't fashionable to throw cigarette butts out, I did not do that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even throw a cigarette butt out of my old Volkswagen. window, but I just have a hard time with someone that does that and throws trash in the creek banks. And now that's a problem we're having here, and it's not only directly in Osage. I think people from up the run, that Scott's Run was named after the creek.
Right. Yeah.
And we got the public sewage district and got the creek cleaned up. And,
but now that that's gone, there isn't.
Yes, and now people are just throwing garbage in it instead of, instead of being a sewer system.
Yeah, wow.
So when the highway came through, and that there was population decline because they tore down houses?
Yes, we lost a lot of residents. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I-79 whips right around, right back up here. That's going to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
When you make that loop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were several houses. Well, Osage Hill, I think Osage Hill, I think it had probably 50 coal camp houses.
Or were torn down because of
that. The road took go. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only house up there is Nancy's and Steve Weatherspoon's and Mary Kay Lehman's. There's three houses up there.
Yeah.
Now.
And Al's father's was taken.
Yes. Now he was on. Now we called it Dog Hill on the other side.
Okay.
Osage Hill was on this side, and Dog Hill was on that side. Now. I think there's maybe 7 or 8 houses up there. Maybe. I know Bob, Big Bob, Norma. No, maybe about 5 or 6.
So I guess what would be, I know the museum has a vision statement on the website, but what would be your ideal vision for Scott's Run and the museum?
I would just love to see it copy like Durban and communities like that. Like a reenactment of the stores or some shops, and but I don't know, that would take an awful big grant.
Yeah.
But I mean that is, I would love to see that, but I that's not going to happen in my lifetime. I know that's really stretching my vision. My vision is going way out there. But I would like, my vision would be low-income housing. I would love to see the area become a low-income housing for seniors and for families, low-income families. I have 3 units that are HUD approved, it's HUD housing. And I leave my name on the list, although I don't have anything available. HUD recipients call me and to find out whether I have something or not. Instead of me calling and tell them to take my name off, I would prefer to get the calls and talk to that person that's calling and tell them what a hard time they are having finding low-income housing. And everything in Mon County is geared towards students,
right,
not low-income families.
Mm-hmm.
And not every low-income family is on drugs or drunks or druggies, and
right.
I have had Stanley, who is a product of Katrina. How many years ago was that? Yeah, I have had him for probably going on 7 years.
Okay.
And I have no problems whatsoever. In fact, his family wants him to come back to New Orleans, and no, he doesn't want to.
No.
He's happy here, and and he's on HUD, and Earl at the end department, and Gloria, and I could tell, I know some of them have given the HUD recipients bad names, a lot of them, you know, but not all of them.
Right.
Are, you know, they could call for references and that. But getting back to why I stay on the list to talk to that person is to tell them to call the county, call their House of Delegates persons and tell them how much low-income housing is needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy, her mother died 5 years ago, and it's a must now that it was in our will that she has to sell her house. Nancy has looked all over this county for a place. And it's just not happening for her. And when that house sells, that she's living in, her mother's house, when it is sold, I'm not sure what she's going to do. But that is my vision for the area, is for low-income housing, and they could very well do that up on Osage Hill.
Mm-hmm.
There's property there.
Mm-hmm.
Down here, talk to some of the property owners that are just letting their
mm-hmm.
buildings fall down in the street.
Mm-hmm. So are those property owners absentee? Do they live here?
No, they live in Morgantown.
Okay.
And live very comfortably. But, well, the Morse property, the one that has fallen down the street, is tied up in family. It's an enterprise that all of it has to be sold. I guess not only their properties here in Osage, but they have some on Osage Hill. And that block factory, they own that too, and it's all tied up, and all of it has to be sold. And again, that's another problem for the residents that are left behind here. That building literally fell down in the street, and it's still there. No one's cleaning the debris up. But I don't know, you travel throughout the
mm-hmm.
state. I know there's a lot of coal camp areas that are
mm-hmm.
in dire need of the same thing that we are in need of.
Yeah, I think.
That may not even have a pulse like a museum to.
Right, that's true. But there,
to resemble that there was once something there.
Yeah, but some of those places are,
or a lot of those places are in counties that are poor, so it's because this is seen as Monongalia County and that there's a lot of money here because of Morgantown. So I don't think there are as many places that are in proximity to a perceived
mm-hmm.
wealthier area. So there is kind of a specific problem here, I think, because the local money isn't coming here.
No, I think it's because we're in this bowl and we're cut off from
mm-hmm.
Morgantown and Star City and the town center now. We're just
right.
down here all like, you know, like we have a wall around us,
right.
And actually we do.
What are,
do you still encounter, like, what are the receptions or perceptions of Scott's Run that you encounter out in the world?
Well, you never hear much about the other communities.
Mm.
It's mainly Osage because we had, I think, so many beer gardens, bars, nightclubs
mm-hmm.
throughout the years, and we had some rough and tumbling characters, and it developed a name for itself, and people, I'll give you an example, Dale Cottingham, his mother grew up here, Shirley Jackson, and he was going to WVU, and on orientation day, whoever was guiding them around, taking the, you know, and telling them different things, and, you know, it was kids from all over the area, Dale said, he said, but whatever you do, don't go to Osage. And Dale said, I raised my hand. Well, what if you live there? Yeah, he said, well, what if you live there? But that's, I think that's par for, maybe not so much now, I don't know, but because there's nothing here and there's no one, everyone's old and decrepit that none of us can fight. There's no barroom fighters down here.
Yeah.
And that's been a perception that I've had people even ask me, you live there? And I said, yes, I've lived there all my life. Aren't you afraid to live down there? No, no. Haven't had any reason to. And which is true, but maybe because I'm an insider, I don't know. No one's raped daily or beat over the head or anything like that, except but that's what, yeah, I've had a person tell me that they had a flat tire and was scared to death and feared for their lives. And I said, well, why?
Yeah, everyone here would have helped you.
They could have knocked on the door, yeah. On my door. And
yeah, right. Yeah, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's kind of from when there was kind of a booming.
Yes, when there, it was a rough and tumbling, as I call it, at one time when there was a lot of barroom fights and street fights, and but Morgantown's becoming. People have pulled out guns here in the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
There's been actually murders,
right. Yeah.
Taking place, and beatings and robberies, and
I mean
it happens. It's everywhere. I mean, I still check my doors every night, and I'm not saying that I'm that lax. But when we were growing up, in the summertime, we had screen doors on this end of the house and that end of the house, and you just walked right through. And, you know, we never locked the doors, and well, especially in the summertime, you had just the screen door because you didn't have air conditioning.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Sad.
Let's see.
What do you want to be remembered and known about Scott's Run and Osage?
How would you rather people?
Well, I don't know that just the fact that we're not scary people, and there's a lot of people that came from Osage that a Jones kid that I grew up that went to Harvard and became a millionaire. It's an investor. And
does he want to fund the museum?
What is it?
Does he want to fund the museum?
No, I wish he would. Yeah. But, I mean, there's a lot of people that came from Scott's Run and, well, and moved to Morgantown and left here with a lot of money. The Levines that we bought the property from, Max Levine, he had clothing store and made big money, and Eggway, who had Eggway's restaurant and some property over there. There's a lot of millionaires that came right from this little town.
So people have sort of benefited from the place?
Yes.
But not necessarily, it hasn't benefited the place?
No.
Yeah.
No, the town has not benefited well at all. Mm-hmm. And the coal industry made big money from this area. Mm-hmm. In fact, I often call attention to the fact that there was 56 miners that died over there in an explosion in 1942. And they have never been recognized as been given a memorial, a monument or anything to this day by the coal industry or the county or the state.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of sad. Mm-hmm. Now, some of my group continues to want a park over there. Mm-hmm. In fact, Lou called me today and wants to work on the park. In the last 5 years, the last 10 years, I know it's been flooded 5 times. It keeps and construction sites are dumping debris from their sites that's going down into the park, but and down into the mouth of where that explosion happened.
Oh, wow.
And I would like to see a monument put in the empty parking lot to talk to the Solomons to, so we could erect something there right on the street. Mm-hmm. At the end of my property down there. Mm-hmm. Would be nice, and to put a couple park benches and for people to recognize their names and that it happened. We have some big posters on the fence. Mm-hmm. Right now and have all their names on it. But that would a nice monument would be nice. Mm-hmm. With all their names on it.
Yeah.
But I just don't think that it would be a good idea to put it over in the park area where the last museum was with.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the flooding.
Yeah.
And I think that area could be filled in and used as low-income housing.
Oh. Yeah, right. Yep. What else?
Is there anything else about the history here that you would want to be remembered and known?
Well, the people, I would like people to continue to talk about them, and there was so many interesting people that I grew up with, black people, white people, and foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
That came here to make a living, and there is quite a history of foreigners and African Americans that came from down south.
Mm-hmm.
To work here in the mines, you know, because the coal barons sent their people down south and then out of the country to recruit weak minds and strong backs. And a lot of those people were foreigner and like I said, and an African American that came, left where they were for a better life, and had a hard time in the beginning with organizing, and a lot of that took place, and that men have died throughout Scott's Run in the coal fields. There's quite a bit of history here.
Yeah.
That's what I would like. And a lot of those women that brought about change, and
mm-hmm.
the women that came here that started the Settlement House, the Shack,
mm-hmm.
and St. Ursula's, and I'd like for all of that to be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And those people that. And even the fact that a first lady came here and her intentions were honorable. It's quite a story there. I would hate for all of that to be forgotten.
Yeah.
And as far as me and my family, I would like for people to remember us that I heard someone say that, the way those kids were raised, meaning me and my brothers, you know, making statements like that. Oh, no, all of us had very good jobs and retired 30 and 40 years from
right, yeah.
our, you know, job positions and... like I always say, we always got up and brushed our teeth and washed our ass and, you know, and did well. Regardless of how we started out in life.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
I can honestly say that I'm proud of myself and my brothers and we came from this very cool camp
yeah.
where we're sitting here today.
Right.
And the company store. You know, my dad, I don't remember it, but I know he did, like a lot of coal miners. You know, they took their paychecks, the coal industry, the company store owned their souls.
Yeah.
And we ended up owning. Me and my brothers ended up buying the company store and the whole block.
The old company store
oh yeah, this property was yes, the old company store building.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we ended up owning it.
So you got them in the end.
Yes. Yes, I remember. I don't know if I want this to be told or not, but I remember my brother Danny. One summer when I was home with my mother and we went, you know, we never, like I said, I never got cookies and milk when I was with my brothers and my mother. But he stole a bag of sugar snap cookies
uh-huh.
from the store. and the shopkeeper, the company store keeper, chased us all away on SHO after those sugar snap cookies. Needless to say, we didn't need to always steal sugar nap cookies anymore.
Yeah.
I think that was scary.
Yeah, I bet.
At least when I was around, anyway. Didn't want to play a part of that. That was scary.
What, like after, there's sort of the museum regulars, but do you hope that it continues on or how do you see it might continue?
Oh, yes, I do. In fact, I often worry about the age group and if they're no longer here. I certainly hope new people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some new people are showing up,
nice.
And as they find out about the museum being here, because
mm-hmm.
I will meet people at the store, and in fact, I met a parent from Cassville. That's another
mm-hmm.
Coal camp community, 4 miles from here. I at the grocery store, and he didn't even know that the museum existed, that I had it open.
Uh-huh.
And he said that he and his wife would come stop by.
Nice.
So a lot of people are, I guess they just zoom by, and you know,
right.
as heavy as the traffic is.
Yeah.
I guess because we sit back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And
all those, the kids who live here,
the kids from this district go to Milan Pushkar Elementary,
okay.
Milan Elementary.
Okay.
Uh, And then from there, middle school, they go to Westwood in Westover.
So there wasn't really a little.
And then from there to University High. Well, then that's another thing we lost. We lost our school, the local school. We lost the post office.
Right. And the post office was lost when the town lost its charter?
No, that was, how many years has that been? I think it's been at least 7 years, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, somewhere. Mm-hmm. I have no conception of
yeah.
Especially years. When was I? 5 years ago. When the federal government, I guess, they shut down a lot of them throughout the country.
Oh, yeah, right. I remember.
And a lot were here in West Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah, they consolidated a lot of post offices.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure if they even have one in Maidsville now. Mm. They did have a local post office down there. Well, no, they do have one. There is one here in Scott's Run. Purscliff has one.
Okay.
That's the only one for you to go and buy stamps other than across the bridge.
Yeah, okay.
You can go up there and get a money order or a book of stamps. Fortunately.
Yeah. Well, I think those are all my questions. Maybe could you tell me a little bit about some of the projects you've done through the museum?
Well, we did have a spaghetti dinner. Fundraiser at the Shack. We did have a dance at the VFW. Every year we have the street fair.
Right.
And when we had a few kids here, we had a little Halloween party for the kids and Christmas. I do have, just a couple weeks ago I had Easter dinner in here, and I invite Albert and some of the people from the area that they don't have their family here, and and then I send plates to to-go plates to Miss Tate, who lives up on the end. Mm-hmm. She's in her 90s,
okay.
And on the holidays and 4th of July. We always have a big picnic, and I have the patio left from where the pub and the antique was, and have picnic tables there. And but small events like Easter and Thanksgiving, I'll have here and invite the locals.
Mm-hmm. And was
the community garden a museum project?
Oh, yes. We had Daniel, who helped us start that. He is still coming. In fact, he may be out there right now. It's Tuesday evening.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. The community garden. And that's neat. But let me think. Do you know? We had that big concert downtown at the Metropolitan.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked with a guy out of the country, Martin Falson,
mm-hmm.
who takes care of a grave of one of our soldiers. His plane went down, and he parachuted, but his parachute didn't open, and he lived right up the road here, here in Scott's Run. He takes care of his grave in Holland, and His name was James Wickline. And through him coming here, he wanted to know all about James Wickline. And it ended up that the bridge, the second bridge coming from Star City, is in honor of James Wickline. We played a big part in that. And he came here and brought his family. That was really neat. And then they had a big honorary thing at the Metropolitan and all about Scott's Run, where James Wickline was from. And that was a packed house. Also, the concert was that we had with Scott's Run music and stories that Professor Falk has put together. We could not do without Professor Eve Falk. She has been a godsend. All the displays here in the museum, she has her students do something just about every semester. They did little textbooks all about the Scott's Run from the housing, the coal camp houses, to mischief in Scott's Run. They each little textbook the student took on a subject. There's 14 of them. And she really, oh, and they, this past semester, they have worked on little textbooks geared for children. Mm-hmm. And she has given the old buildings, she and her students, one summer, a facelift, painted them, and cleaned streets with her students and helped with the street fairs. And she has been the backbone, really, not to myself, I say Professor Falk has really been the backbone of getting this off the ground and to where it is today, she and her students.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I'm. I couldn't be more pleased.
What would you say are the values of Scott's Run?
Well, I would say be good to your neighbors and. Treat people the way you want to be treated is the biggest one, I would say. And, that's what, you know, I try to teach my grandkids to not to be bullies or be good to not only their teachers, but their classmates and things that I have been taught here. And because the cliches, the examples that I have given you from Mary Jane and my mom, I've also heard on the street or, you know, in the bar from foreigners, from African Americans, from white people that I have come in contact with over the years. And I think all of them, regardless of their nationality or their status in life or how rich or poor they were, I learned from them. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that I think is important. And I've seen that with a lot of people that I grew up with is you learn something all the time. Mm-hmm. You never know it all. Yeah. You can always be taught from regardless of who it is and how rich or poor they are.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to share or anything you wish I had asked?
I don't think so. No, Emily, I think we talked about it a lot.
Next time we'll get the juicy stories. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.